Burmese master Mahasi Sayadaw says, why do we meditate in order not to grasp, in order not to grasp, or to conceptualize so that we don't grasp at experience to fixate them? And he said, on what are we meditating? He said, on whatever is arising. So anything that is arising in our mind is what we are meditating on. That's a good news, because if we need to meditate on what is not arising, that will be just impossible. So luckily, we are asked to do the only thing that is possible. So we have seen and spoken about quite a few things, but maybe not so much about thought. And it seems that there is a misunderstanding in meditation that believe thoughts are the enemy of meditation. It has a long tradition, this vision, because Gampopa, the great Tibetan teacher of the 11th century, says, nowadays people do not understand how to meditate. They want to get rid of their thoughts. So long tradition, at least from the 11th century, so it's not something new. But the misunderstanding that what we would be aiming at is a state without thought. It is true that when we try to calm the mind or concentrate, then it is better to be without thought or very little thought. But in Vipassana, as Mahasi Sayadaw was describing, to meditate on whatever is arising. And I don't know for you, but sometimes thoughts are arising in my mind, so then I need also to include them in my meditation. So the first element, very important, is not to see them as obstacles. They are not an enemy of meditation. They are a very important part of our life. And nothing that is important in our life is outside meditation. Otherwise, meditation would be outside of our life and will have very usefulness and very little impact. But we don't take thought as a grounding experience, because they move too fast. It's more difficult to be aware of thought than of the bodily sensation or on hearing, as I described last night, just to be close to the experience of hearing. To be close to the experience of thinking, it seems, where do I put my mind? It seems the thought is arising and disappearing. So there are a few ways to deal with thoughts. They are fascinating, that's why we use them. And sometimes in meditation, there are types of meditation where we use thinking, and that are very important. So thoughts are very important and useful and powerful. But sometimes we want to discover something other than the using of thought. So when they come in our meditation, and that's not what we want to use, first we can recognize that the thought of the past is appearing in the present. If I think about yesterday, it's now that this thought of yesterday, memory of yesterday, is arising. If I think about tomorrow, it is arising now. So to really see that it is a present experience. The fascination of thought is that they exist in one way, but they appear in another way. They exist as a present experience, but they appear as yesterday. They exist as a present experience, they arise as tomorrow. And that's where they are powerful, and that's where they are confusing. In our meditation, sometimes we think about other people. And I said, if all the people we thought of during this retreat were in this hall, I tell you, I mean, we could not come in, I mean, just forget about it. So, which means that certainly they did not come. So nobody is coming, there's always somebody by the door to check, you know. So nobody is coming, which means that all those people that we think about is just thought, not people. It's just it is our own making, our own dialogue. Maybe I can imagine someone in my sitting and get upset and have argument and this and that. Can you imagine? It's no use to call the person and say, why did you come in my meditation? So that is showing that we give to this imagination some reality that it does not. So we can recognize if there is an image of somebody, I imagine a person there. If I try to say, so at what distance is it from me? You will never find. What is the side of this person? Is it normal size, half, third? You will never find. Because they are not object, they are just imagination, and they have no dimension. It's just the mind appearing on that. So sometimes it is interesting to check this person that is coming to disturb me in my meditation. So where is that? Is it close or far? What size? And then we discover there is nothing there. Just it is just a creation of our own mind. But yet we can really get involved in that. And here I spoke about being upset. There's also object of desire, this beautiful person was so fun. But it's still only your memory, only your imagination. You have nothing to get so excited about, you know. So to recognize imagination, representation as just being something which is not in front of us, but which is rather us or in us. So that the also a way to deal with that. One philosopher said the image of a dog does not bark. You know, said, shh, be careful. No. The image of the dog does not disturb us. So it's not a dog, it's just the image of the dog. So sometimes it's good to recognize that. Because the problem is not with the imagination, not with the thought, is when we are confused about what they are. So putting things in the present, that is a very important aspect. Even those imaginations, this person that I imagine, I'm now here, you know, and this person is not here, to recognize this aspect. The image or sort of another place or memory of another place, it's happening here, now in this hall, right inside of you. So even if you like to escape to by the sea or the mountain, no, I mean, you have your own choice, you know, but still you don't leave this place by memory. So recognize that. It's a kind of fascination, and it's never fully satisfying because it's not real. So even we try sometimes to escape in our meditation through memories, thinking about something much more fun than this meditation hall, you know, but we may have some kind of satisfaction for a few minutes, but then it's also frustrating because it's not the real thing. So if we recognize that, it never will be give full satisfaction, recognizing that also. Now there are also other ways, there is also the judgment evaluation we may have for other people. You know, we have many of opportunity here to evaluate, judge, you know, in the dining hall here, you know, on the lawn, you know, good person, nice person, difficult person. I mean, you have all your judgment, you know. And we believe this is an objective way. We believe this person is a bad person, this person is a good person. You may have all your judgment in much more subtle way than what I'm expressing. And with that we are caught. When we have a good person, then oh, this person is so fantastic. A bad person, then there's some kind of aversion. And we believe it's coming from the other person. I have used this example quite a few times. It's like you read, you know, on the t-shirt, bad person, good person. But it's funny because not everybody has the same reading, so it must have letters that do take some different shapes according to who is reading. So we can see that these kind of thoughts that are here happening during the day, and certainly they do happen for most of us, when we realize this is not an objective way, it's just a belief. Just a belief. So we take the responsibility for that. This judgment, evaluation come back into ourselves and say that's just a belief, just a thought. And then suddenly we feel that we are free. We are free in the way we relate to the other. Because when we thought this person is bad or good, We were conditioned by that. We were bound by that. So to recognize our judgment and evaluation as just a belief, not a truth. And of course, we also have some about ourselves. There are not more objective than this evaluation about other people. The judgment I may have about myself, good, bad, hopeless, whatever, fantastic. And sometimes it changes from fantastic to hopeless to fantastic. And also that nobody can be reduced to a judgment like that. A human being is much richer than just this kind of evaluation. So this belief that that is the truth, I am like that, this way, that way, is also a great conditioning. Maybe even some people whisper in our ears this kind of thing, you are hopeless or you are fantastic, and then we believe it's something objective. But it's really a strong conditioning. So to realize that when a thought is arising about ourselves, whatever, it's just a thought, it's not an objective reality. So I think it's interesting to see on other, because most of the time it's simpler to realize. And then we can also apply that when thought arising within ourselves. The thought, I don't know how to give an example. The thought have only value in the world of thoughts. It's like the shekel. I mean, I don't think in India you can use shekel. You know, you go there to pay your tea and they say, well, we are sorry, but it's just paper for us. So in the same sense, thought are just, they have just a value in the world of thought. They are not solid, objectifying truths. Now, it doesn't mean they have no impact. They have a lot of impact. And we use this impact, we know how to use them. That's not the difficulty. To build a hall like that, and certainly, wow, many thoughts were needed for that. A lot. And that we can use, is no problem. But when we believe that they exist as stones, or they exist as trees, that's what we finally give reality to thought, then they are burden. Sartre, then they are like stone that we cannot lift anymore. So it's a beautiful image. We bring thoughts, and finally they are like stone we cannot lift anymore, because we give them this concrete reality. You know, imagine two politicians, or three, how many you like, you know, arguing. It seems that all their thoughts are truths. They don't say, well, I see like that, and the other said, well, maybe I see like that. Can you imagine? Usually they throw stone to each other, which are their thoughts, so strong. I can say today it's a nice day, or it's a bad day, whatever you want, but has no effect on the day. The day is just what it is. You know? It just does not apply. Just express how I feel, it's nice, or it's okay, I like it and don't like it, but it does not change the day. So the thoughts do not change the reality, change the way we see and we deal with that. So at times, do recognize thoughts for what they are, but it is also skillful to come to the anchoring place. Otherwise, one will just be lost in this thought, but I want to understand this one, but I read in the last one, so we would just get a bit crazy. So come back to the anchoring place. Feeling the body, feeling it in the abdomen, in the chest, the sensations, or just being with hearing. And that's helpful. When the mind is a bit more sensitive and thought arising, you can just question, but don't see them as an obstacle. Nothing is an obstacle in our meditation. Nothing. Sleepiness, agitation, worries, thought, calmness, tranquility. I'm not going to go through all the dictionary, but nothing is an obstacle. Just some experience a bit more difficult to be clear about them. Through the practice, we will learn to be clear with any experience. So they're not a problem. Sometimes they are just a bit too challenging for us. So come to the grounding experience. I think it's a very good a way to bring some sensitivity to the mind, and when something arises, you can recognize it and a few thoughts or imagination, and then you again come to the grounding experience. It's a balance. We certainly sometimes overdo being concerned with thought, or overdo coming to the grounding experience. It doesn't matter. Slowly we find the balance. And to realize what is a thought, it is very much freeing. And they are very powerful. To recognize them is also freeing us from their power. Obviously, all the conflict we find everywhere, you know, depending on thought, not on the landscape. So there's a great freedom in recognizing what a thought is. So explore. Again. Come to the, settle in the grounding experience, and sometimes when thought arise, explore that, or in the dining hall or wherever, just to see what they are.
Thank you.